This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 1st of May, 1959. The title of this lecture is End of Course Lecture. This tape is 31 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Thank you. Well, you've had it. I can assure you that if you have survived this course, there isn't much question about your next few thousand years. Now, of course, we wind up here with a great many unflapped processes. Also, there are many processes that are unflapped. We wind up with a great many questions, undoubtedly unanswered, still burning on the front burner. We probably wind up with several sections of several lectures rather undigested as yet, to say nothing of those occasional blanks. Now, it would be nice if you could hear all the lectures again. And it would be very nice if you could get all the processes flat. And it would be very nice if you could go through the course again. But you've had it. Now, any further courses involved, it'd be something like a future HCS BSCN course or an ACC, and you don't want to be human when you get to an ACC. I mean, it's almost fatal. We have had three or four human beings get into an ACC by accident, and they didn't get out. They just didn't ever get out. It's a very sad thing. Not still human. Your course record's been very good. Everybody's very, very happy with you. Your results and so forth, excellent. But you won't ever learn Dianetics and Scientology any further, theoretically, than you know it now until you have applied it very broadly to a lot of people, a lot of different types of cases and so forth. And you won't believe some of it until you've made a few theta clears or something like that, you see. That'll be hard to believe. But your practical application is one stage, and your teaching of it is the dip of whipped cream on top of the Charlotte Russe, you know. There's nothing like learning a subject, like teaching it. And you have to teach it, and people start smarting up and saying, "Well, now, that's all very well, but, You have two choices. You can either dash off in a wild flight of fancy, which they'll catch you up with later, or you can know your business. And usually an instructor has to study much harder than the student in his first days of instruction. That sort of caps this sort of thing. It puts you at the level of overt act on the subject of a knowledge of man, and that's quite beneficial. So I can see in your future that you're going to learn a lot by practical application, by taking the things that you have learned and using them, seeing the changes that you create, and about the time you get totally self-satisfied. Very dangerous thing, you know, to get self-satisfied. That's supposed to be the most dangerous frame of mind. Some people think insanity is, but we can cure that. But to become self-satisfied and think there is no more for you or anybody else to learn, let me give you just briefly a small outline of what there is yet to learn over and above Dianetics and Scientology. A fellow by the name of Immanuel Kant, the great Chinaman of Königsberg, they called him, the great philosopher who dramatized his name. He had it all figured out that man had an innate moral sense, and after he figured all that out, then he figured it all out how he got paid for it. And therefore it wasn't innate, but it was something he acquired because it was recompensed. These two contradictory books are certainly less contradictory than the great statements he made, which evidently totally overwhelmed the entirety of philosophy and has stayed with us up into this culture. It's very heavily in this culture at this time. And that is transcendentalism. In its most crude rendition, transcendentalism means that there are a tremendous number of things which you will never know because these things exist beyond your power to know them. Very, very interesting philosophy. A man who'd utter a philosophy like that, this isn't really worth the name of philosopher. Or maybe he is. Maybe that's what a philosopher does, contradict himself. But let me point out something to you. If anything can have an effect upon you, you certainly can take cause point toward it. Anything can have an effect upon you, you certainly can take cause point in its direction. Well, that's for sure. That's for sure. And if there is knowledge that is totally above your power to learn, then it will never exist for you or for anybody you know. So skip it. About all we had to have to say on the whole subject. If you could never attain, reach, or experience in any way, including telepathy, a body of knowledge, you certainly better never bother your head worrying about it because it's never going to come in close. Now, sometimes pieces of knowledge surprise us. There's a piece of knowledge in nuclear physics on how you get bits of plutonium to blow up by being associated with bits of plutonium. That is the ultimate in individuation, plutonium. You get them into proximity with another piece of plutonium and they blow up. They have to be so individual that they can only live alone. They remind us of some only ones in life. Now, nobody thought that when the Greek was experimenting with natural philosophy, as he called it, and define the electron and all that sort of thing, that it would blow up into a blow-up as big as atomic fission. But that was a piece of knowledge that was above the Greek's ability to know, wasn't it? But he was already on the gradient scale of knowing it, wasn't he? And I assure you that the very Greek who was plotting these things out, and later on the Chapel of Croesus and so on, these chaps are still amongst us, probably running garbage trucks or something by this time. And they eventually got to know it, didn't they? Even though it was way ahead of them on the time track, they got to know it. And the atom bomb possibly will be further up the track in terms of obliteration. Who knows? But still, we're on a gradient scale toward knowing it. Now, a wonderful piece of news burst today as we complete this course. Wonderful piece of news. The byproducts of atomic energy plants, which make electricity, have been declared waste previous to this time, and now a clever nuclear physicist, has found out how to make bombs out of the waste products from electrical energy. So even putting it to sound industrial use was lost. They couldn't. Now they use atomics industrially, where they make out of its waste products all the bombs they need. And unfortunately, how all this is done already was published broadly to the whole world. This was very interesting. It keeps two great nations in the world today from being in argufication with each other. They'll have to protect their franchise. These two great nations up to this time were about the only ones that could make large quantities of atom bombs. Now they've scattered around power plants and the wherewithal so that almost any nation, Panama, the Argentine, almost anybody, could dream himself up a few atom bombs. Well, that's very, very happy, because about this time somebody's going to have to get some good sense and say we better knock off this thing called international boundaries, because it's not safe to have them anymore. I'm sure they wouldn't have knocked them off where only the major nations were in possession of weapons, but now that all the minor nations can get in on the act, I don't think that it's too far ahead of us. Now, there was knowledge. There was knowledge. Nobody forecast that knowledge would occur. They happily published it to everyone. They told people how to make electrical conversion with atomic energy, and they published all the papers on it. And now the waste product of what they have published converts easily and at once into an atom bomb, and they're all in the soup. All right? Let's go a little bit further. Can you experience an atom bomb? Can you experience an atom bomb? Well, if you can be the effect of anything, you can be at cause point over it. That's for sure. There's no such thing as a stuck flow that can't be reversed. Well, if that's the case, and international frenzy and hydrophobia permits us to do so, we're liable to wind up in the favored position of this race. And we're liable to have made it, after all the way up the line. An atom bomb's construction knowledge, or an atom bomb's effect upon you, politically or bombastically, is certainly not above you or detached from you. If you're under a bomb and you're in a body, why, you'll get it. That's it. Fait accompli. The exact desire of the greatest governments on earth will have been accomplished. Not that you, as a Scientologist, are their target particularly, but human beings definitely are their target. Some future century, it won't be the atom bomb. It possibly will be the high sonic wave that will have been the thing invented that nobody can do anything about. Now, it bespeaks of a tremendous apathy for a person to say, we can do nothing about it. Below that point is, as long as we can do nothing about it, it doesn't matter what we do, so we'll just do anything. It doesn't matter, just do anything. The course of failure is first milestoned with there's nothing we can do about it. And then it goes into, after that, so it doesn't matter what we do, and that is below failure. Now, people who are coming up with wild, incredible remedies for illnesses that they themselves know or feel can't work, like superstition. If you take a rabbit's foot to bed with you at night, you'll never get rheumatism. You know, something weird like this. That's just a symptom of having failed utterly to do anything about rheumatism. Very well. Kant and his age must have been in a position where they felt they could do nothing about anything. Otherwise, they wouldn't ever have invented transcendentalism. Get the idea? They said there was these vast bodies of knowledge that you would just so high that you never would know about them, and that was it. It was totally unknowable, and so on. Nonsense. If you knew they existed, you knew something about them, which immediately canceled out the whole proposition. Now, if you know an atom bomb exists, it still is not in a position to wipe you out, providing you have a little time to know something about it. How these nations are going on now is quite interesting. They've made this very secret, and then their secret jumped out of the bag without them being able to stop it. They told people how to make electrical plants with atomic energy, and then somebody came along and found out that the waste product of that made an atom bomb. Well, their cat got out of the bag. That essentially was something which, by decree of being top secret or confidential, some such thing, nobody could know anything about, you see. It was held away from people, so nobody could know anything about it. This in the hope that everybody could be an effect of it. Everybody could be an effect of it because nobody could know anything about it. Yes, but they still had hanging around their flanks a certain type of wolf called a spy, and they still managed to loot the information out here and there, and finally the governments themselves just got through publishing the whole works. This body of knowledge then ceases to be something we can know nothing about. It ceases to be that. But every operation that man is engaged upon, which he has tried to protect by extreme secrecy, which he has made into a mystery, has sooner or later leaked, failed, and collapsed. Because he's tried to do the impossible. He's tried to create a cause which everything would be the effect of, because they couldn't locate the cause. I want to show you that in Dianetics and Scientology, we have avoided this pitfall rigorously from the very beginning. And as soon as there were any results of any kind, as soon as there was anything to talk about, we talked about it. There were no wraps put on this. Once in a while, when a technique would come out that was in expert hands, very dangerous to a PC and wouldn't show any gain, why, we've said that the technique was under wraps. That is to say, we've said it's under wraps for use, but we've told people what it was. One of man's impulses, as performed by Kant and as done by atom bombs, was to isolate and make secret or hold off bodies of knowledge, such propaganda that you can never know about them, such propaganda that anybody who lets the secret of the bomb out will be cursorily and immediately shot. Such propaganda is it's terribly dangerous knowledge and nobody should know it. Such propaganda as it's awfully holy and you daren't touch it without blaspheming it. All winds up to the same thing. A cause point, that body of knowledge, is created in the hopes that it will have a total effect upon the rest of the human race. It's the only thing, the only reason that's done. And sooner or later, it either collapses through internal rot, or it springs a leak, or somebody looks at the bubble and it just disappears, and the knowledge comes out into the clear. That's always the case. But whoever was trying to hold it back, and whoever was trying to isolate it, and whoever was trying to use it for a total effect, or whatever organization was always devoured in the collapse. That governments would take information of the magnitude of atomic fission and hold it under secrecy, forecast at once the collapse of all such governments. I'm not speaking as a revolutionary, just as an evolutionary. Inevitably, this occurs. The secret rites and mysteries, the tremendous isolation of information, use of great duress to safeguard and protect the great secrecy of it all, winds up in the end with the cause point blowing up with sufficient magnitude to destroy anybody who was keeping it there. Therefore, the subject matter of Dianetics and Scientology has traditionally, it's always been, open. The only difficulty imposed was how to get it into words and on paper so that it could be transmitted Because the subject of life is a difficult subject, only from this standpoint that you tell people the common denominators of life and they get confused, it imposed its own communication barriers. Life itself imposed communication barriers. An individual auditor or a Scientology organization today exists in a society which has an economic and social set of barriers which are very difficult to violate. An auditor would love to just go on auditing people and group auditing people and forget about the money and all that sort of thing. Next thing you know, why, he's disobeyed the communication channels of the society and he isn't auditing anybody. He's having great difficulties. We have environmental impositions and that sort of thing, and they tend to keep the information penned up to some degree. But as we break these things down, as the information flows more broadly and it flows better, it's more intelligible, it's more effective, we find ourselves in the favored position of never having imposed a great secrecy of any kind on this particular body of knowledge. Even the first book, which as a press stunt was called Secret, the book Excalibur, has at this time been totally released into the body of this information. It wasn't released at first because I didn't even know if it were true. But those things in Excalibur that are true have come into the body of what we know. Therefore, we are on a very clean communication channel. Nobody is trying to hold this information back. The only thing that people are trying to do is to safeguard the ethics of this information. And that you will find happening. We don't want information to be used inexpertly, and we don't want it to be used improperly or for man's harm. And to that degree, why, we like to regulate it. The best form of regulation is rights of use, which should be established as rights of proper or intelligent use. And we like to see this information used intelligently and brightly and rightly. And people who use it so never have anything to fear. As a matter of fact, people who use it wrongly aren't ever really punished. The information simply backfires on them. It's a terrible thing. You take the key points of life and go dead against them. What you know of the overt act motivator sequence tells you at once that something is going to happen. And it does happen. We are only interested in people using the information rightly, using it expertly, getting the best possible results out of it, and also, quite properly, preserving the exact form of the information, because this perverted could again cause another set of vias and crooked dog's legs on the communication lines, you see. So, you'll find that HCO operates, Hubbard Communications Office operates to maintain ethics, technology, and awards. Receives the help of all auditors in doing this. Things go wrong in an area, problems in ethics and so on are generally turned over to committees in that area. We're trying to do the right thing. We're trying to operate along the best solution for the greatest number of dynamics anytime we can. Sometimes it's hard to see our way clear, but usually we make it. We have certainly made it so far. I hope we'll go on making it for a very long time. The reason I have taught this course at this time and made these lectures is because we are at a change point in the history of Dianetics and Scientology. This history began more than a third of a century ago and has come up through greater and greater workability to more and more cases to a point where you can now take in a muzzled co-audit unit, properly run with the proper techniques and good HC, and you can produce results which would have made an auditor 9 years ago practically faint, to get profile changes and course changes. If he could have gotten them this fast, he just would have sighed with relief. How he had to work for these changes, how he had to work for them. And in the interim years, people coming along, how those people had to sweat for them. Now, it isn't being said now that it's all wrapped up. That's not true. We're merely at a change point. We are at that change point, which is changing Homo sap, to Homo Novus, and that is the only change point we are arrived at. Now, that's a pretty big change point in man's history, and it's a change point which we now can make good, that I'm sure of. But what bigger change points are there in the future? Well, somebody said to me the other day, a well-known auditor, he said, "Do you realize you're never going to make a Theta Clare?" And I said, "What do you mean?" A little bit startled. And he said, "Well," he said, "in Dianetic axioms it says that absolutes are unobtainable." And I said, "That's right." And he said, "Well, that is why you're not going to make a Theta Clare as an absolute. Because every time you get a person into the zone of Theta Clare, he starts striking straight out for operating Theta, and there isn't any precise arrival point. He arrives at this point, which covers all of the described data of Theta Clear, and starts going right on out toward operating Theta. And as such, who is to say then when he's exactly at Theta Clear and not higher? You can probably make a Theta Clear plus, but you'd have to be very careful and stop the session at the exact instant to make a Theta Clear. Now, a messed clear can be made, and with additional processing and so on, can be stabilized and kept stable. Many messed clears, this has been terrifically successful, but was not more than a recovery point. 1957 December was the recovery point for 1947 and 1950. It was no more than that. We had found rapid ways to make what had been made. Rapid ways to make what had been made. We hadn't struck out for anything like Theta Clear. Well, now we're in the business of making Theta Clears. Now we're in a superior zone right now to all the succeeding years. And this, I assure you, is really the first time we've been cleanly, clearly, and almost totally in a senior zone to all of the earlier periods. That's why this course was made. But what goes out from here, who knows? I know that we can make it now, internationally, worldwide, without any difficulties. Actually, we are set up to do just that. Somebody's going to look back someday and say, how did Ron know enough to get starving, stumbling offices in all the exact locations that needed to be in so that this push could be handled? Well, Ron didn't know it at all. He merely had confidence that it would someday happen. It was planned for to that degree. You actually are part of that plan. You have your own role in that plan. We can go for broke from here. You don't desperately need more information than you have right this minute. You've got a lot of information. You don't desperately need more. If you're going to make a higher state or Theta Clear people faster, perhaps, or understand some of the phenomena involved in the actual state of Theta Clearing, why then probably you will have to know more. But you can make them, if here and there, very arduously. You can make releases with great ease in HAS co-audits. Now, there aren't tremendous numbers of outstanding cases that you won't be able to reach. Just before I came to this lecture, the two toughest, most resistive cases in London, both of them were pronounced cracked by the very processes that would be run in HAS co-audit, not even professional level. They cracked on those processes. You have those processes. And those were the roughest, most resistive cases which had ever come to the attention of Hazy London. I don't wish to overbuild your confidence, but I do wish you to tell yourself this. When you start striking into a case that appears to be very difficult and appears not to be changing and so forth, you had better sort out what you're doing, because we have already done a case as rough. That doesn't mean to condemn you with your future failures. You can fail all you want to. Until you've failed a few times, you won't know the beautiful taste of success. I was very happy you were in this course, and I'm very glad to have had the opportunity talking to you. And I've certainly said enough in the last few weeks, so right now I'll merely say goodbye. Thank you.